Hi friends, I'm Momi, your host.
And I'm Hina, your other host. This is a show where we unpack our trauma through movies and television. You know, like adults.
We've been best friends for 10 years, so there's a lot of trauma. Every episode, we give unfiltered advice to fictional relationships, romantic, platonic, or otherwise. You get all the satisfaction of spilling tea without any of the consequences.
It's like a Tumblr fever dream, circa 2009, but we promise to keep our use of the terms ship and OTP to an absolute minimum. This is Parasocial.
Hello.
Hi. Hello, listener. How are you doing?
I hope you're doing well.
I hope you're doing fantastic, actually.
We're doing great.
This is going to be a fun episode because we've chosen to kind of change up.
Yes.
We're going to change it up. We're going to see how it goes. Thus far, we've been talking about a single relationship and kind of analyzing it and talking about it and sharing our experiences. And it's been great. It's been wonderful. Mm-hmm. But we want to do more. And so what we're going to be doing today as a little sample is we're really just going to be picking a topic that has to do with relationships, obviously. We're not turning it on its head. But then we'll also just kind of give a ton of examples. We'll be talking about a variety of relationships in TV and film, some of which we've agreed to talk about. Other relationships are going to be a surprise to each other. So strap in.
We hope you're ready.
This thing.
Before we get right into it, let's talk about our drink for this week.
I'm already halfway through, so go ahead, share.
Okay, yeah, share sure. I'm glad you like it then. That must mean good things, because I made it this week, and I was in the theme of this week, which is codependency between mothers and daughters.
Hey.
I seek to make the most basic mom drink you could think of, and this is a rosé wine spritzer with a little bit of lemon-lime seltzer water and some Prosecco.
Yum. I'm a basic mom, and so I find it delicious.
Yes.
Yum, yum, yum. I actually am a mom. I'm a dog mom.
She's
now.
A dog so, mom now.
So this is my little mom drink for my little pupper who has a white mom name. Her name is Blanche. So
she's perfect. If you were wondering, she's perfect. Also,
she's a great doggo.
Hina has taken to dog mom life. Just, it's annoying. It's a little annoying how well she just like slid on in there.
Just pivot.
She just pivoted. She carries water bottles. She carries treats. She has the doggy bags. It's all in her purse. She's ready to go. She has
a toy.
She has a little bandana for Blanche with her name on it. Obviously, you got to know who Blanche is.
Yes, it's themed in fall. But now that we're in summer, I want to get her like a little tropical summertime bandana.
I'm speechless because for so many years I was the dog mom. And so I recently retired from such life.
What an interesting way to put it.
I know. I don't know how else to put it. We're just going to move past it. And so I didn't expect you to take to it as quickly as you did. Mm-hmm. And so it's just been entertaining to watch.
I've parented human children. And let me tell you, it is so much easier to parent a dog. It's insane how much easier it is. It's only the good parts. And not saying that there aren't some difficulties, but if you had to level up the difficulties of parenting a human entity,
absolutely.
Oh my God, it's a walk in the park. And so I'm glad I did it in that order. Human child to dog child.
Because
she's heavenly and she can do no wrong. She can't even talk back to me. She doesn't even speak English. So it's great.
Yeah, no, she has zero capabilities of trying to actively make your life a living hell.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think the thing about dogs is even the smartest dog is still a moron. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's adorable.
Look at you. Just ain't nothing behind those eyes.
Yeah. She's now stinky. She's stinky. She's.
Are we just telling the whole world my name for my dog?
Sorry. Listen, I think I mentioned this last week. Here's the thing. Everything's stinky and it's confusing. That's all.
Yeah.
And so now we've added Blanche to the list of stinkies.
She's a little stinky. I call her Boo Boo and Stinky Blampo.
It's adorable, but it's who is it this time? Who's to say?
Oh yeah, I call Blanche and my boyfriend the same thing, and we all the three of us call each other all the same names. anyone can be stinky. Anyone can be crap ass.
Yeah, I literally will hear them having a conversation downstairs. Who knows and who I'm like, talking yo, to? Who is talking to who? I want answers.
No, you know, when you get into a long relationship, you just become homogenous. Like that.
Everything's
like
the
that
same.
Green goo in what's that Disney movie? Sploot, splot,
goo, flubber,
flubber, flubber. You just splot. Become this kind of green sticky. Mass, and uh-huh. You don't know where one begins and the other ends.
Just one being.
Yeah.
Hive mind.
Yeah.
Got
just
it.
Just a thought, really.
Got it. Well.
Well, that's a good segue.
Yeah.
Why did you choose to talk about codependency in mother-daughter relationships, Mommy?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, full disclosure, I had one. Well, is it still one? Who's to say? I don't know. Speak to my therapist about that one. And so I wanted to talk about this because Heena and I were discussing what other relationships do we want to talk about? And we kind of landed on, we just want to talk about things that happen in relationships
mm-hmm.
and what relationships reflected those things. And
yeah.
This was the first thing that came up on my list.
Yeah.
Because I lived it.
Life imitates art. Art imitates life.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're going to talk about a few ways that you can have a codependent relationship with your parent,
mm-hmm.
specifically with moms and daughters, in that that's, I feel like it happens the most. Maybe that's a weird generalization or inaccurate. Again, I'm not an expert, but.
Oh, yeah. We're not giving you advice. You know
you
that.
You know that. I'm not trying to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
But like, I've just seen it. Not only with my own mother-daughter relationship with my mom,
yeah.
but like it, with my cousins, with, geez, maybe it's in my family. I don't know. So, you know.
Let's unpack the family trauma. Well, I mean, what's hard is that, like, obviously we're women. So
yeah, that's true.
That is a strong bias inherently. Mm-hmm. I only have one parent, so I only know what it's like to have a relationship with a mother.
Yeah.
So there's that.
There's that.
And I think it's more about the unhealthy dynamics and our triggers come up the most with our same-sex parent. And
yeah.
I think that that's true for men and their fathers. I think that's true for women and their mothers. I just think it brings up other things, right? It's this mirror of who you're expected yeah. to be in society, who you thought you were going to be at X age, the dreams that you want your child to
bless.
Fulfill, blah, blah, blah. It's an easier comparison.
Yeah.
While I'm acknowledging that we do not live in a gender binary, I'm just saying, generally, if you are a cis-identifying woman,
yeah.
it's a lot easier to relate to your cis mother.
Yeah. True.
You know, it's just a similar experience.
Right. And so some of the things that let me just give you some hallmarks of codependency. Let's go through that a little bit.
Are you going to give me a generality or is this based on you or is this like potential symptoms?
This is potential symptoms.
Okay.
And then
it.
We can talk about how they've
Which ones
manifested.
You apply to you.
Mm.
Okay.
Hashtag all. So the parent is easily overwhelmed by their child's emotions. So they have a hard time enforcing boundaries and limits when their child is like angry or sad or distant. And it's basically like this idea of like, I'm not okay unless you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard for codependent parents to like compartmentalize essentially
mm-hmm.
the difference between their child's emotion and their own emotions and how they interact.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. How do I own what's mine and
right.
how do I acknowledge what's yours without.
Yeah. Well, without like internalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's like, well, if you're upset, then. I then automatically have to be upset now.
Right.
And vice versa.
Well, because their self-esteem is tied to that child.
Yes. Yeah. And then there's the need for control. Everything needs to be just so. And if the parent is going through trauma or struggles or stress, they tend to like instill more control by controlling everything their child does. So then there's the helicopter parent,
mm.
the overprotectiveness,
Overbearing. Sure.
Micromanaging, etc. They play the victim a lot with their child. And so it's a lot of like, well, in my day, or like when I was a kid, or...
Please
share with the class. Okay. What was that?
Okay, well, when you were saying they often play the victim, it's wild that we're going to put this on the internet, but fuck it. When you brought up playing the victim, I just want to say that there was this one time in 20...
Something?
I'm going to go with 2014.
Okay.
I was 18 years old.
Oh my God.
And... Mommy was in the process of moving out of her house for the first time, and she was in the process of getting out her stuff, and one of the last things that she had left behind was an iPad that her boyfriend had given to her as a gift, and we decided to go get it after she had a meeting with her mom to basically ask for it back, and her mom said no because of all the things that she did for her, and you don't deserve this iPad and it's mine and blah blah blah. So
even though it was my
gift,
we
had met up at the mall down the road from her mom's house, and when her mom said no, she ran to my car, which I was waiting in, and we ended up racing her mom to the top of this mountain. She goes in the house,
which is where the house was, for context.
Yeah, it wasn't just a mountain, like fucking Dr. Seuss and the Grinch with all the
right,
presents. So we go up the mountain where her mom's house is, and Mommy runs in the house to get the iPad. She grabs it. She comes back into the car, and as she slams the door to my car, as she's in the house getting the iPad, her mom pulls up next to me waiting in the car, and she oh so sweetly says,
"Hina, honey. I really don't want to have to do this, but I'm going to have to call the police on you if you take her iPad. I mean, I already talked to her, and like, I don't mean to, I would never want to do this to you, honey. Like, this is the last thing I would ever want to do is call the police on you."
The audacity. Oh my God. Oh my God. Meanwhile, I'm in the house frantically looking because she hid it somewhere. I finally come outside. Now, for context, I was willing to give her the computer that I had been using, the laptop. Yeah. I was like, here, have this laptop. Give me the iPad that is rightfully mine. And she was like, no, you know what? Give me the laptop too. You don't deserve that either. What? So I come outside and I see her talking to Hina, and I'm like, oh fuck, this is not good. And I overhear her telling Hina that she's going to call the cops, and I lose my mind. So now I'm arguing with her. I put the iPad in the truck. And I basically had to be like, yo, mom, can you cut it out with this bullshit? Because this is ridiculous. And she did not like that I used that language with her. And while she was in shock, I ran back into the truck and we drove away.
Yes.
Who knew? Who knew using the word bullshit could just stun her into silence?
Yeah, I'm not going to go into details, but 18-year-old Hina got out of the car when Mommy got back in the car. And I did have some words with her mother. And...
Boy, oh boy. Anyway, you want to talk playing the victim? There it is.
Check
that one off the list.
See, I've made also a list of symptoms, and I'm interested to see which ones we have in common, because I have that as well, playing the victim.
Okay. Basically, they're never wrong. When could they be wrong? No, you're wrong for even thinking that I'm wrong, child.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that, which which let's just translate this to real life. I think I'm always wrong now as an adult woman.
As a result of that.
And so like, it's hard for me to like do life.
Step into your power.
And like, yeah, just be confident in literally anything, because I always think I'm the one automatically going to be wrong. And like the way it's manifesting most recently, to be candid about it, is like now when I'm right, I have to be fucking so right.
Yeah.
And everyone needs to know how right I am because it's a goddamn miracle that I feel right.
Yeah.
Which is a menace.
Yeah. So you can take on this kind of like patronizing tone.
Oh, my God. I am the
fat elementary teacher.
Oh, my God. My inner feminist is like slowly withering away. In that, like, she's molding. She can't handle when I try to mansplain.
She's bald.
she's bald. She's losing all her hair. She's so upset and stressed out because I'm trying to mansplain.
You know what I'm picturing? The phoenix. Okay, this is going to go deep in the lore.
Bulb.
Harry Potter Chamber of Secrets at the end. No, it's not Chamber of Secrets. Maybe it's Prisoner of Azkaban. Fox dies, and from the ashes is born the little fox.
Oh, no, it's Chamber of Secrets.
Okay, and yeah, I'm thinking of that.
That's my inner feminist molding. That's her, right there, that.
Just sad and gray and covered
in
ashes.
She's upset. She can't handle anymore. She's withering away. And anyway, so that's a direct influence of them never wanting to be wrong, is that now the child is always the one wrong.
For sure.
And then my last one is using guilt as a weapon. And forever and a day, pulling a guilt trip on your child. And just everything is woe is me, whatever it is that you're experiencing. Like, I don't need to, like, this is unfair to me for you to feel like this, to do this to me. If like anything goes wrong, if I get a C on a test, it's why did you do this to me? How could you do this to me? Don't I love you? Don't I give you like all of the things you could ever want? You don't, but okay. And so like, you know, like what, it's all of the, basically whenever something doesn't go their way or they don't like it, it's never a conversation or a compromise. It's always a, I am being mistreated by my child through their actions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I did have a few that you didn't have on your list, but I think we'll have an opportunity to talk about them a little bit more as we get into the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I wanted to kind of highlight before we get into it is I was looking up these different articles and different definitions of codependency, but one of the best ones that I found was from this person named Dr. Becker. And they say, codependency can be defined as any relationship in which two people become so invested in each other that they can't function independently anymore. Your mood, happiness, and identity are defined by the other person.
Mm.
In a codependent relationship, there's usually one person who is more passive and can't make decisions for themselves, and a more dominant personality who gets some reward and satisfaction from controlling the other person and making decisions about how they'll live. And then on codependency.com, or what is codependency.com, they were saying that in mother-daughter relationships, it's often born from a narcissistic mother that's unable to see her child as a separate entity.
Yeah.
And so they said, she rarely, if ever, feels accepted. This is the daughter. She rarely, if ever, feels accepted for just being herself. She must choose between sacrificing herself and losing her mother's love, a pattern of self-denial and accommodation. Her real self is rejected. First by her mother, and then by herself. The consequence is internalized toxic shame based on the belief that her real self is unlovable.
A lot of...
You make a fox noise?
Yeah.
She's just rising from the ashes. Isn't that such a good definite? I think the pattern of self-denial and accommodation is something that a lot of people will be able to relate to.
Yeah, if anyone was wondering. that's me. Yeah. That's, wow. Ha. Huh. Way to put me into a paragraph, you know what I mean?
In my defense, Dr. Becker wrote this, so.
Thanks, Dr. Becker. Also, fuck you, Dr. Becker. Yeah, so that's really what it feels like. And I just didn't realize it until I was like 27 and I felt like the world was crumbling around me. But yeah, I think it almost like, I don't know, I think the biggest thing, sorry, to be more concise, the biggest thing is it always feels like you're constantly stunted in your growth. Like everything just feels like my mom and like that dynamic is no longer active in my life.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm missing a piece to the puzzle in everything. in that, like, I'm trying to actively create what I had to create control and stability.
Like, to recreate the dynamic that you had with
her? Yeah, like, well, almost like, because it's not there anymore, mm-hmm. I have no one telling me what to do and how to feel.
Right.
Right? I have no cues anymore. So, and because I don't have any self-esteem.
Right.
You know what I mean? I have, in my own brain, like, I am not allowed to take on that place.
Yeah.
I have to actively, you know, find it in other places, but putting that on another person is also negative.
Right.
Right? That's also not healthy. So then you always feel like, well, now I'm one step behind in everything because I have to, like, account for whether or not I'm purely I'm doing a thing because I want to, or I'm doing a thing because I need the feedback loop. Or, like, the control of it, or, like,
continue the habit, to finish the habit cycle.
Yeah.
I have a perfect relationship for this.
Okay.
This might be a hot take, but just hold tight. Just stay with me. Reserve some judgment.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Rory and Lorelai from Gilmore Girls. I know. We love them. They're so quippy and fun. They're so exciting. I love them.
Okay.
You
want thin ice right now, don't
you? A relationship that many of you at home were like, God, I wish I was like that with my mom. I get it. Hold on. Okay. So I'm not saying that they don't love each other. That's not the argument.
Okay.
Just to be clear, right? Okay. I'm not saying that they were awful for each other and they never loved each other and any of that. Certainly not saying that. But what I am saying is that Rory and Lorelai, one of the many reasons that they are close is that Lorelai had Rory at a very young age.
Yeah.
And being closer in age, not only can they potentially relate to each other a little bit more, they were growing up together at the same time, and that's a very bonding experience. But because they have that bonding experience, they also have these unrealistic expectations for the other person. Lorelai is hyper-focused on overcoming whatever obstacles were created for her because she ended up having Rory so young. And so she's always wanting to use her raising of Rory as evidence that she didn't fuck up, that she did it the right way. And so in turn, Rory always feels this pressure to be more than she is.
Yeah.
Right? And she needs to be the living proof that Lorelai didn't mess it all up, that she knew what she was doing, that she's proof of her mother's capabilities. And so while Lorelai doesn't always own that, right, she likes to see Rory's overachieving energy as a product of just her personality. But we see that it's something that she expects when Rory doesn't live up to that expectation, right? When she gets into a relationship with Jess, when she drops out of Yale, when she sleeps with Dean after he's married. Like, the reaction from Lorelai is so uncharacteristic of what we're accustomed to, but that's because their unspoken agreement is that we're going to be codependent, but we are going to do everything we possibly can to be able to ignore that codependence, which is why they always practice withholding from each other. You know?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like,
okay.
I won't tell you things so that we don't need to get into it, so that I can continue to be who you want me to be and you can continue to be
who
I want you to be.
Yeah.
And we can kind of coexist. But the second any of that is shattered, right, they freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
And they do very uncharacteristic things because they're not really solving that stuff as they're, like, having fun and hanging out.
Yeah.
Because I think they're both more committed to the idea of who they are.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah.
You know, they're both very committed to the Rory Lorelai project.
They are. Did you watch the reunion episodes or whatever?
The Netflix special, the four episodes? Yes.
What'd you feel about them? Well, did they outgrow their codependency, or is it still there? I didn't watch them, so I don't know.
Oh, I think the echoes of it are still there, right? That dynamic is there. I think Lorelai and Rory both have a very hard time defining themselves outside of each other. And their struggles, which is why they both have these issues with commitment.
Yeah.
because like their idea of like being tied down or I don't know, they're both very invested in their own narratives about who they are.
Yeah.
And I think it makes them very blind to what they're doing to each other, to the people in their lives, to the men in their lives. And so at the end, this is a huge spoiler alert. You can skip forward 30 seconds if you don't want to hear it. But Rory is pregnant at the end, but we don't know who it is, whose it is. And I feel like they opened up a can of worms in that year in the life that they weren't prepared to finish. And so I want to not necessarily see resolution, but like I want to see them work through that shit.
Yeah.
Because it's clear that like Jess is like a thing for Rory, but she ends up still being with Logan and like being his side piece while he's like engaged or dating this other girl. And like knowingly having an affair with Logan. And like meeting up in New York and like hooking up and she's like lost and whatever. And Jess again is like kind of this like guiding light for her throughout the whole series of like when she's led astray, he like pulls her back down to earth.
Damn.
But I don't know. I almost feel like Jess is like too raw and real for her. Cause the way that she works with her codependent mother is that we just pretend like we're like quippy and amazing and these independent, wonderful women together.
Yeah.
But Jess like fucks up a lot and like he's rough around the edges and he's honest about that.
Mm.
And I almost feel like he doesn't do enough pretending for her. And it like makes her have to face things about herself, which is why she grows.
Doesn't fucking deal with it. Yeah.
When she's with him.
Yeah.
But it also like is harder to be with him than it is to be with anybody else.
Right. Because she has to face that shit. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I think for me, so while you were talking, I was thinking about how, hear me out. I am not a Disney princess stuck in a tower. But
are you not?
Well, well,
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not literally that, but like I'm the closest you're going to get. You know what I mean? Or like my childhood was the closest you were going to get. Like I slept in a closet.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so Harry Potter, there's so many parallels I could make.
Just laugh through the trauma.
Laugh through the trauma. But Mother Gothel and Rapunzel are who I want to talk about next in that they have a very like forced codependency.
Oh, 100%.
Right. But like one of the hallmarks of that, of like their whole dynamic is like the amount of gaslighting that Mother Gothel does.
How do you think the gaslighting fits into a codependent relationship? Or like what's its function in a codependent relationship?
It keeps whoever is being gaslighted in a constant state of uncertainty.
I have a word for it. I found in my research.
Wait. What?
Learned helplessness.
Oh my God. Wait. Hold on. I need to drink. Hold on. I can't.
Right? That's what it is learned helplessness.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, yeah.
It's like, let me tear you down.
Oh, 100%.
But let me be there to lift you up so that you continue to believe that I'm the only person
who can do that for you. Yeah. You can't do it yourself.
Yeah.
And if you try to do it yourself, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
And like, that's disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's always like anything that you try to do that's bold or daring, even like a little risky, but it's in light of you trying to create control and like have accountability.
Symbolic, yeah.
Can't do it. Won't allow it.
Yeah.
Me moving out. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. Totally.
And so, yeah, or like, I don't know. Yeah, it was just like, there was just so many things where it was like, I couldn't do it because it wasn't her doing it for me or like succeeding in that way for me so that I therefore thank her and hold her responsible for that success.
Right. If she doesn't have a hand in it, it's like not meaningful anymore.
Right. And it's like me abandoning her.
Right.
Or me hating her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
and like Rapunzel like finding Eugene, right? Like Mother Gothel lost her mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, also there was the whole magic hair piece, which I don't have magic hair, but.
Well, is that not symbolic for, because the golden hair was keeping her young and alive,
right?
And
oh, like living vicariously through?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, in some instant, like in some ways, every codependent relationship is the, like there's the person that needs help and there's the person that needs to be needed. And
yeah.
So in some ways, like for the person that needs to be needed, there's always the golden hair is having someone that needs them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
It's keeping them alive.
Yeah.
To like
it's
have
it's like how she's feeding off of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's sucking all the life out of it. And so yeah, and so like when Eugene, I think even like in Eugene and Rapunzel's relationship.
Hot.
Oh, so hot.
By the way.
I love my favorite like Disney fact is that the I think they're called the Imagineers or whatever, who like the animators for
sure.
Rapunzel
right.
actively went out and like did surveys and polls on like what features in a man made him most attractive to women. And like that's how they created Eugene, is that like they tried to make him the most handsome Disney prince, period.
Hot take. I think that story is completely fictitious and they tried to base him off of Dimitri and they didn't quite get there. I think that yeah. is a fun corporate Disney explanation for what they really did, which is take the Fox
oh
animated
God.
Classic, Anastasia, and...
She'll never forgive and she'll never forget.
I'm just saying, say whatever you want. I know the truth. Like, that's
okay.
fine, but...
She feels very strongly
well,
about
it's
Dimitri.
A fact.
Okay.
It's not my feelings. It's
okay.
about...
Yes.
They're lying to me with my eyes wide open. How dare you?
Right. Rude, honestly. Disrespectful.
Sorry, what were you saying? Before I so rudely interrupted.
Really, though. I get it. You love Dimitri. We get it.
Well, I have to remind everybody every episode.
I knew the Anastasia episode was a mistake. It was just feeding into this. Eugene and Rapunzel, their relationship, or Rapunzel feels a sense of relief, almost, in that relationship because Eugene wants... could care less about her hair
right.
and what it gives him, right? Like, he's constantly moving it out of her face.
Mm.
He's, like, moving her hair away so that he can see her.
Yeah.
And, like, even in those nonverbal subtleties, Rapunzel's understanding that he's not there to use her.
Yeah.
He's there for her,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it kind of creates that contrast between what Rapunzel gets when she's trying to interact with her mother and reason. Well, Rapunzel's not her mother. Gothel isn't her real mother, but
yeah.
her mother figure,
mm-hmm.
right? Whoever she's codependent with, and what she's getting from that new relationship.
For sure. Well, I think that outlines that, like, you can have a codependent personality.
Yeah.
Outside of being in a codependent relationship. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, but I feel like it's kind of, it's a thin line.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Because the person that with codependent personality is subconsciously working to make their relationships codependent.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're doing it in all their relationships. And I think it can be hard to know, like, what of my personality is creating this?
Right.
And what is objectively present in the relationship?
I think it's like for someone who is on the submissive end of that, right? Like, it's hard to notice that you have aspects of a codependent personality.
Mm.
And like, it doesn't have to be all of your personality.
Oh, sure. I mean,
right?
It never
like,
is. Yeah.
But in the parts of it that are, it's hard to even notice it in that it's so ingrained and it feels very natural because
yeah.
you grew up with it, right? It's all you've kind of ever known in a way.
Yeah.
And so like those habits or even the language you use or all of it, it's hard to like catch until
yeah.
someone catches it for you almost.
Mm.
It's almost impossible to catch it yourself because like you don't even think it's wrong.
Yeah.
You don't see anything wrong with it because it was okay for so long.
What's interesting about that is I wrote some notes about like my personal experience. I don't have a codependent relationship with my mom. Mm-hmm. It hasn't always been perfect, but the ways in which it wasn't perfect wasn't about codependency. But what's interesting is like you kind of got to like squint to see it. Mm-hmm. So for example, we're not codependent, but I have a single mother and I am the oldest child by 10 years. So because of the reality of life, I was dependent on for a lot of very two-dimensional stuff, right? Like, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, like, I have truly raised children.
Yeah. Right?
Make their lunch, homework, bedtime, rules, regulations, food, like, all of it. And because of that, I was given more freedom younger. Because if I was going to be, you know, given all this responsibility, the trade-off for my mom was that I should get more privileges. And I think that there's sound logic to that, right?
Yeah.
But because of a lot of different reasons, not just my mom, I was very, like, parentified as a child. So I didn't have, like, I would describe my childhood as enriching, interesting, illuminating. But I wouldn't say it was very childlike. And I spent most of my time with adults talking about politics and like social inequality. So having said that, like, I think that I see irresponsibility, carelessness, immaturity, or what I perceive as immaturity, helplessness. Like, I hate that in other people because I think I was never able to be a child, so like it annoys me when adults are indulgent about like not being responsible and not handling themselves. So I want to like beat it out of them. And I also just like to have things the way that I like to have them.
Right.
And then having that coupled with the fact that I have a very high threshold for stress. Like, I don't get stressed out very easily.
No, you don't.
So it takes me a really long time to become stressed.
Yes.
And when I'm stressed, what I do is my like classic go-to strategy is to skinny down, which is a very simple process by which you analyze everything in your life and you get really critical about whether or not it's necessary. And if it's not, you put it down. And so it's only in those times of like extreme stress when I have to skinny down, do I then realize what I'm carrying that isn't actually my own because I'm being critical about everything I'm doing.
Right.
So in those moments, I'm horrified by how much of it are other people's. I'm like looking at this plate of things and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Throw this on the floor. Get this the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And I mean,
but it takes me a really long time to notice it. Because I also think I was taught as like, that's what's weird is like, it doesn't come from me wanting to do things for other people and or even to be needed. Because I love to do things for myself. It comes from this underlying belief that, like, if you have more capacity to take things on, anything on, like, you should. Challenge yourself, push yourself.
And I mean, that's evident just from how you conduct your normal life.
Yeah.
Regardless of what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. That's super evident. But yeah, you do. You do kind of... I mean, when anyone has a problem in our friend group, we go to you. You're who we all think of first.
But I never think of it as what's, it's silly, but I never think of it as doing things for other people. It's just more like if I have capacity, it's like about challenging myself.
Right.
Than it is about like doing things for that person. And I think that's why it takes me a very long time to realize that people are dependent on me. Because I don't really contextualize it like that. It's like a, like I want to help people, but
on the flip side, right? On the flip side, it's hard for anyone else to feel like it's a, we are being dependent in that sense, right? Because it doesn't feel that way. And like, that is what we are doing. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's hard to feel like it's a lift or it's hard to feel like it's a dependency versus a like assistance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because you don't outwardly express any lift.
Well, because I don't feel it until I do.
Until you do. And then you're like, fuck all of this shit.
Oh, no, honey.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, no. And get this off of me.
And you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like, it's I'm working on it. Jeez. I'm working on just like being critical of like analyzing what I'm actually saying yes mm-hmm. to and why I'm saying yes to it.
Yeah.
And like recreating my own boundaries. Cause I think in the pandemic, because it's like emotionally stressful, I've just been made so much more aware of just like how easy it is for me to be like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because I don't, because it comes from a lack of trust in other people doing it the way I think
yes.
it should be done.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you can, I think that's self-explanatory.
Yeah. Yeah. You get it.
Yeah. And I think on the flip side of that, right, it's like I'm trying to be more aware of like the ways in which I just opt into dependency. And the thing is, it's like I'm inherently like when you dig down, you got to dig deep. You got to, you have to search, okay?
Yeah.
You need to be an archaeologist to find it. But I am an independent person
at heart. Yeah.
Like, truly, all I want is independence.
Yeah.
That is all I ever want. I don't want to have to depend on nobody for anything ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I have trauma and I have the childhood I had.
Yeah.
So it is buried. And so that's why it's, like, hard for me to realize when I'm opting into dependency or when I am choosing independence, even though it may not be the right choice at that point in time.
Mm.
Like when things really hit the fan,
right?
And like, that's probably when someone with like normal levels of stress would be like, yo, I should probably ask for help here. I'm like, no, I got to do it myself. And I say nothing. And it's only until people start seeing things crumble around me that they're like, do you need help?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I should probably take some help. Right. And then vice versa, in like the small things that I could probably do myself, I'm like, oh, I need help with this. Because in my head, it's not large enough. It's not significant enough for me to like activate my independence. And it's backwards.
Well, it's triggered that toxic shame.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Of like,
the only time I can ever do things for myself is when it's in a form of self-punishment. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Make noises through the trauma.
Yeah.
It helps. Trust. It helps. But yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So like, and like that, I can tell you right now, that is absolutely born from me and my mom and me having to be a parent
mm-hmm.
to my mom because she couldn't deal with her stress.
Yeah.
And like, it was me doing all of the little things for her.
Yeah.
Because she couldn't deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then when she could do things for me, it was only ever when things truly got to a place where like there was really no point of no return.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then at that point, I had to help her anyway, right? Then it was my fault.
Why do you think that, because you're describing this relationship with your mom obviously you're a child. So there's like, it's not the same as two adults having this dynamic, right?
Right.
You don't have a lot of choice. But in this scenario, she's the one that, she doesn't need to be needed, right? She's the one that needs help and you're the giver.
Yeah.
Right? It's interesting that then in your adult relationships that you haven't then mimicked that dynamic that you're used to, right? And that like I had to parent, so
well,
I parent.
Because it was like the when I had to parent, it yeah. was like in, it was when she expected me to. It was kind of like, it was backwards in that, it wasn't that I took this responsibility on to create a sense of control in my
for
life.
For yourself, yeah.
And I did it for myself. No, it was, I was expected to, mm-hmm. and I was guilt-tripped into, and I was forced to
mm-hmm.
take on that role.
Right.
And so it was never something I elected into.
Right.
Which
right,
is
right.
why in my own life, I only ever elect into it in the most dire of situations.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Because I was never asked to do so except then.
Yeah.
Right? And it was never really an ask. It was more of a, if you don't, we don't eat. If you don't, we lose our house.
Right.
If you don't, I can't, like, you can't go to school. If you don't, you know what I mean? You'll never get anywhere in life.
Well, that's a good point. That moment of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never really thought about it like that. That's interesting.
Yeah, because then I think if it was vice versa, if I was taking that control on my own,
right?
If I was like, fuck whatever's going on right now as a kid and just like decided of my own volition, separate of her, to then take control and to be the parent and to create stability.
Mm.
I think then, of course, in my own life, I would want to do that as an adult.
Oh, that's interesting.
But
yeah,
it was never something I wanted.
Yeah.
Or even had the chance to want. So now it feels like I feel uncomfortable with it.
Oh, I've really never thought about it like that. Like if you had, well, it makes sense to a certain degree, right?
Yeah. But I think,
yeah,
I think it's hard too, because there's just so many layers, you know what I mean? In that, like, even with things like in the extremes of like, there was, what's that one show? Oh, The Act. I always forget its name.
Yeah.
Forever forgetting its name. But like, granted, there's another mental health condition going on there.
The most extreme that it could possibly be.
The extreme. But it's kind of like that, in that like that learned helplessness, right? You kind of don't understand it until someone shines a light on it.
Well, you were the emotional parent.
Yes.
You were never actually given responsibilities.
No.
Yeah, that makes sense now.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, you're there to console and to soothe, almost like a teddy bear.
Oh, yes.
Not like you have power, you have good opinions, you have whatever, and like I'm empowering you to like take control, which would still be inappropriate, but...
Right.
And I mean, that's actually the control that I was given, right?
Right.
A little inappropriate, I think, in some situations, right?
Yeah.
Or in a lot of situations.
For sure.
But, you know, born of necessity. And it's like, you're probably too young to do this, but you got to, and you can do it because you're going to do it.
Yeah. And for me, it was like, no, you can't. No, you can't really think for yourself. And I don't want to trust you with anything, but I need you.
Comfort.
To comfort me. I need you to be there to make me feel loved and appreciated and worthy.
Yeah.
So that I therefore can do the things that I know you can't do.
Yeah.
And I think it was that energy of like, knowing that
stroking you.
Yeah, just like
asking you to stroke them so that then they can like live to fight another day for you, I guess.
Right, yeah. Like it's weird, right?
You're kinda like the handmaid that's like waiting for her husband to come back from
Lord,
war.
I am the handmaid, yes.
Yeah.
And like it creates like this energy of like in the back of my head, the person that is supposed to be from the outside world looking in, the person who is the proudest of me, who thinks the world of me, I can do whatever I want, is telling me that's not true with their actions. And then with their words, pantomiming what they should be saying and what typical parents should be doing.
Right.
In that of, you can do whatever you want. You can be whoever you want to be. You're strong. Also, you can't do anything. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Also, clean this and do that. But no, not like that. The way I told you to do it, because you don't know what you're doing.
What do you think? What do you think?
Am I a mess? Yes.
No. I was not going to ask that.
I'm a cute mess.
I was not going to ask that. Don't put words in my mouth. I was going to ask, how would you feel if your parents ever listened to this show?
Oh, God. No, I feel...
Because...
Okay.
I would say... Here's my hot take. Here's the thing. I know both of your parents. So
you do.
This might impact... You know what I mean? I don't think so. I can't imagine that they would be surprised at all about what I'd have to say. I think that they would be surprised by the way in which you say the things that you say.
Oh, for sure. I am harsh. And I am explicit about it.
Well, I mean, it's your lived experience.
Oh, absolutely.
And you should
but
be
I
able
think,
to.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, that's how they would feel.
Mm.
Is that I am being unfair or harsh.
And how would you feel about them hearing you say it like this?
Fucking cry me a river. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
would it be empowering, though?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, it would. I would also just have a lot of anxiety
around
it. But it's more so.
I think that that's something that like listeners can relate to, though. Of like, I'm sure that there's some shit that you would say if you were sitting where we're sitting about your parents and your lived experiences and the things that you've been through, that like maybe your parents know, but they don't know.
Yeah. And like, here's the thing. I think it's what I'm feeling right now, even in thinking about it, is not how I actually feel. It's a learned reaction.
Yeah.
And it's instinctive in that that's how I was taught to react to doing something like this in the like to quote unquote to my mom.
Yeah.
In that like she will have a meltdown. I will somehow be punished or I would have to sit in a car and have her scream at me for 3 hours. You know what I mean? Like
that
is the emotional fight or flight response that I get in thinking about that.
Yeah.
But behind all of that, if I move past it, fuck it, dude.
Yeah.
It's about time. Honey girl, get on the same page.
Yeah.
I am who I am because you did this.
Well, it's never too late, right? I mean,
yeah,
again,
no, and I mean,
we're not giving you prescriptive advice.
We're not.
I'm not telling you to blow up your life. I am telling you, if you choose to blow up your life,
do it with someone who will get out of their car to tell your mom off.
Oh, thank you.
When she threatens to call the cops, that's who you do it with.
Well, yes, but I was also going to say that I think it's a good barometer of like if there's anything there worth saving. And I guess like I'll take this time to give a big shout out to my mom, who I'm pretty sure is going to listen to this show.
Yeah.
I think the biggest compliment that I can give her is that I don't think that there's anything that I can say on this show that she will be surprised at or angry about.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Your mom became a mom to me.
Yeah.
She is my mom. I have more than one mom.
Yeah.
I also have a stepmom who it has been my mom over the years.
Yeah.
Like, we've had our ups and downs.
She's great.
And that relationship has its own drama.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. She knows.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We talk about it. We discuss it. It's not a surprise to anyone. So I could talk about me and my stepmom's relationship all I wanted.
Yeah.
And she just would not. She would be unfazed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so
the truth has power, I think.
Yeah, and I think the same thing goes for your mom in that, like, I think even in seeing your relationship with her, I think when we first became friends and over the years, it's like, oh, shit, like, this is what, maybe not what it's quote-unquote supposed to be, because who makes that rule?
Right.
But, like, this is different. This is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
In what the relationship could look like.
Well, yeah, and I guess I feel like I'd be remiss to say I love my mom very much. She's a wonderful woman.
Mm-hmm.
But to contextualize it, we can go into this later on a different show. When I was 14, I moved out of my mom's house. I packed a bag.
She did.
I've slammed doors in her face. I've called her a bitch. I've screamed at her. I can throw a tantrum like nobody's fucking business.
Yeah.
I've said real hurtful shit. It's easy to say, like, if you're thinking at home, oh, my God, I would never call my mom a bitch. No. I mean specific. You know, John Mulaney has that bit, right, where he hates middle schoolers because they get to the thing that you don't like about you.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of shit I've said to my mom.
Yeah.
And I think she's wonderful, and we're very close now. But I think all that to say is that I think sometimes there's this perception of like either you have this like awful relationship with your parents or it's like been sunny and they've been your best friends and they made cupcakes every birthday.
Right.
My mom was not a cupcake bitch. She does not bake for my birthdays in elementary.
She makes great banana bread muffins, though.
She can cook, but she did not do that shit for me. But like there is still a way to find some consensus. You don't need to have a Stepford mom or dad.
Yeah, well, there's layers and like it's a spectrum. There's layers. Like, and I think what hit me the most about your guys' relationship was how grounded it was and how like there wasn't fluff. There wasn't any like posturing or performativeness about it. It is what it is.
She doesn't ask me about the weather. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Or like,
yeah.
When you guys talk to each other, it's like never like a, my mom will ask me like, oh, how are you doing? Like, how's everything? How's work? And I'm like, I'm good. There's never that with you two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's always something. I mean, I guess, like, there's a lot of other shit that influences that.
But, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It's just, there's more there than just the routine of it.
Yeah. And I think in a lot of ways that has, that's the kind of relationship that I had with my dad. We are not speaking right now, but that's the kind of relationship that I had with him. And when you have a relationship with a parent that isn't like that, the alternative feels so pointless and meaningless.
Oh, girl, bless.
That, like, if I had had that relationship with both parents, I think I would think that I would keep going. But, like, it's just so clear that there isn't, like, I don't know why we talk.
Right.
I don't know why we connect. Is there a purpose?
I mean, that's how I felt. That's just how I felt about my parents both.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I doing? Why? What is the purpose of this 5-minute conversation for you to ask how I'm doing and I say I'm good? And if I actually want to talk to you about my emotions, you don't have time because you called me when you were at work because you didn't want it to be a long conversation.
Right.
You just wanted to do
the
motion.
Check the box. Yeah.
And it's like, what are we, why? Then why am I calling you? Or why are you even getting mad that I'm not calling you? Like,
that's it.
Why are you getting mad that I'm not calling you? What's the point? Do we do the same shit every time?
Yeah.
Text me. I don't know. You got options.
Yep.
How many options do you have to communicate in this world? Send me a goddamn email if that's what you want. But, like, why am I being ridiculed and punished or felt made to feel guilty for not calling you when all we do is this?
Yeah. I do want to bring up another example that I think speaks to, like, a more realistic embodiment of this dynamic. Because, as you said, we're not princesses in a tower.
We are not.
And unlike Gypsy Blanchard and Dee Dee Blanchard, which we didn't go into a lot, but that's a case. That's a show based on the real case of Dee Dee Blanchard and Gypsy Rose, who in 2015, Dee Dee Blanchard, the mother, was found dead in the house. And it all came out after a lot of court cases and investigation that Dee Dee had Munchausen by proxy, which is a disease where you make someone else sick so that you can make them better. There's Munchausen, which is a disease where you believe you're sick or you make yourself sick so other people can take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then Munchausen by proxy is exactly by doing it by proxy to somebody else so that you can be the one to care for them. And that's what she was doing to her daughter, Gypsy Rose, who had no idea that she didn't have cancer, that she didn't have all these diseases, that she didn't need a feeding tube, that she didn't need to take all this chemotherapy, blah, blah, blah.
Or be in a wheelchair.
Right. I mean, there was just so much that she was gaslighting her daughter into believing about herself. And she had an inkling of something being wrong. Ends up meeting this fucking guy on the internet. And she convinces him to kill her mom because she wants to escape this torture. So that's an extreme.
Yeah.
But I also want to talk about a little movie that I know you've seen, Because I Said So.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, that movie. Here's the thing. Oh, God. I ironically love this movie.
Oh, yeah. It's not a great movie.
I like this movie. But anyway, go ahead. Yep. Because
so Diane Keaton, it plays a character named Daphne Wilder. And she is this codependent, over-involved mother with three daughters, ironically, one of which played by the woman that played Lorelai in Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah.
But her two oldest children are married, and her youngest daughter,
Mandy
Millie,
Moore.
Yes, played by Mandy Moore. And she's basically afraid that Millie will never get married and she'll never find the right guy because she recently broke up with someone and she has her own business and she's not prioritizing love and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But she's just projecting all of her insecurities about dying alone onto her daughter. And she takes the extreme step of, like, putting out a personal ad to find a daughter to, like, basically 10 things I hate about you, her own daughter.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's like a more, I mean, even that is absurd to put a personal ad on behalf of your child, but it's more realistic in that I think a lot of codependency feels kind of good
mm-hmm.
to to like have someone worry about you and fret on you and just fuss around you. Because it makes you feel loved a little bit.
It does. It does. It makes you feel like you matter.
Yeah. But the result, right, is a child who needs to spend some of their brain energy holding boundaries with you because you just don't have common sense boundaries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you project all your insecurities around, who then creates insecurities that maybe they wouldn't have had in the first place, right? Mandy Moore is like a 20-something who owns a catering business.
Right.
Who cares if she doesn't have a boyfriend?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think that movie, maybe that's why I like it so much. It's because, like, I see a lot less intense versions.
It's almost like your fantasy of, like, what it would be if, like, your codependency was, like, happy and...
It is,
or like
bro.
Yeah, more yeah, good yeah. intentioned or something.
Bruh. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, with like hotter guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, I think that movie is a good example of like when the matter of codependency is like more positive. Almost.
Yeah, I guess that's a slippery slope.
It is a very slippery slope.
Because eventually, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Eventually it becomes something else.
Oh, every time.
Right. I think codependency in situations like that, because that's a common trope, obviously. Because right. codependency exists in not just parent-child relationships. But we often see them like at that snippet.
Yeah.
You're doing too much. You're kind of pushing my boundaries, but everyone still thinks it's like funny and happy and whatever. Mm-hmm. But like the play out of that in 2 years is that that person is like on their last fucking legs. Like,
yeah.
They have been pushed to a point that they just can't fucking handle it anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, it does. Yeah. It can get ugly.
Oh,
absolutely. I mean, it did get ugly for me, but like, you know what I mean? Like, it's. I think too, and even her, in even like dating, right? We're like, I want grandchildren.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I can't stand it. In the fact that like, yo, I need you to first acknowledge how, who you raised.
Yeah.
And what I've become. And then you think about whether or not grandchildren are going to happen on your timeline.
Yeah.
Does that make any logical sense to you? I hope it doesn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, or like my mom not even realizing I was in an abusive relationship for 4.5 years. I was having it in front of her. Like she,
yeah.
I was living in her house for most of that.
Yeah.
And yet.
What aspects of it did she see? Like, were you very expressive about all those things, or did you try to
shield? I tried to be, but she just thought he was so amazing and that she was expecting us to get married. Like, her goal was just for me to be married and to have kids by 23.
Yeah.
And so for her, him just being willing to go to church with us every Sunday was like enough. It was just enough for that. And like, she was like, oh, perfect. This is your person for life. I have no complaints. Don't ruin it. You ever have your mom say don't ruin it when it comes to a abusive relationship?
Yikes. Or any relationship. Or any relationship.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
God damn.
So I think that's like the ugly side of that coin, in that there's only so much you can take for so long.
Yeah.
Before then you start to, the illusion is now broken and you start to realize, oh shit, like this is not right. Like, this does not make any more sense.
Yeah. There is this. Have you watched the reality TV show Smothered?
No.
So Smothered is a TLC show that's based on mother-daughter relationships that are too much. And it follows like four pairs of mother-daughter duos, all above the age of 21. Like, they're grown women. They're not late teens.
Okay.
They're very well established. And it doesn't matter who these girls are or the details. I'm just going to say that of the antics that happen on the show, here's a few of them. They share clothes with each other. One mother moved with her daughter when she went off to college. She like moved to a nearby town so she could be near her. They, all of them, FaceTime every day and talk on the phone every single day. They tell their mothers important news before their husbands. There was this whole storyline where, like, she was like, I need to tell my mom about my pregnancy before I tell all of the other grandparents. And he was like, I don't think that my parents are going to, like, be cool with that, or to, like, not take offense to that, right, or not to feel like it's weird. One mother wakes her daughter up in the mornings by licking her like a puppy.
What?
So one of the moms took a topless photo shoot together.
Oh, she didn't.
Yes. Another pair went on these double dates together.
No, no.
With guys in their 20s.
No.
So the daughter is in her 20s and her mom is going on a double date with her, but both of the guys are in their 20s.
Lord, on this double have date. Mercy.
It's called Smothered. If you want to, like, spend time.
Not really.
Being triggered, I recommend every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Central.
Holy shit. They have a TLC show for fucking everything now, huh?
Yeah, I'm starting to be more critical of the things that I consume on TLC.
You think? Yo, nah. I feel like if I watch that show, I'd be catatonic. I'd be catatonic after. Someone would have to come and revive me. Because what? So, fucking what? What?
I think on that note.
On that note, let's go into our segment, huh?
Okay. This is a new segment because this is a new style of show. This is a segment called Would You Rather? It's very simple. It's exactly what you think it is. Mm-hmm. Of all of the relationships that we've discussed in this show, which one would you rather be a part of? You can choose, are you the mother or the daughter,
okay,
in this situation? And why did you choose this relationship over all of the others?
Okay.
I'm not going to give you any other stipulations.
Do you have your answer?
I don't know. Do you have your answer?
Yes.
Okay.
I think mine's answer is predictable, though.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Mandy Moore.
Oh, because I said so.
Yeah, because I said so.
Okay.
In the sense that...
So you're the daughter
in
that
daughter.
Relationship.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
I see.
My therapist will have so much to say if she listens to this episode. I think in that mother-daughter, like, relationship and dynamic, while the mother has, like, no sense of fucking boundaries,
mm-hmm,
I think in the way that the mom has no boundaries, there is, like, the way that Mandy did it in the movie is, like, she had to forcibly create them, but, like, the mom was willing to try to change. And, like, try to... And it, because the mom then realized in, like, finding her own relationship and finding her own love, how insane she was being.
Okay.
Towards her kids. So that's the one with hope. That's where I find hope.
Okay. I think I'm going with Lorelai.
Makes sense.
I think there's something about that relationship that feels highly redeemable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's built off of wanting the best for the other person more than it is built on needing to be needed. And I feel like there's a lot more opportunity for growth in their relationship. Because I think needing to be needed is, of course, you can overcome almost all obstacles in therapy, or to at least find better coping strategies. But it's really hard to not need that anymore. And I don't think that that's why they are the way they are at all.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's not indulgent.
Yeah. I think it's very redeemable.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think I just really like Mandy Moore's life.
In that movie?
In that movie, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she is, like, she's a sweetheart, you know? She's lovable.
For sure. But, like, she also, like, I think the thing that I like the most about that movie is, like, she realizes it.
Mm.
She, like, kind of cues into it, and then she spends time. I mean, I think the way that she initially tries to address it is kind of, like, immature and maybe not very effective.
Yeah.
But I think eventually she starts to figure out, like, oh, like, there's a way to combat this.
Yeah.
That isn't destructive. And I think that's what I find the most relieving about that movie.
For sure. If you haven't watched it, I recommend seeing it. And if you are liking this style of episode, also let us know.
Yeah, please let us know. We are trying different things out. We're
adapting, we're moving, we're therapizing.
Yeah, exactly. Adapt.
Yeah. Achieve. Overcome.
Yeah, there we go. I know I was missing a word there.
You're almost like, there though. Yeah, thanks for joining us. This is a fun episode. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. All right, see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Where are you going? You don't leave at the end of a Marvel movie. Before you do anything else, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr at Parasocial Angst. You can tell us what you think about the episode, write Hina love letters.
What can I say? I'm a Leo. I run on praise and adoration. But you can send Momi your original fan fiction. She lives for that shit.
I do live for that shit.
But until next time,
have a snack.
Call your therapist.
As bona fide professionals, we have to give you the disclaimer.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes only.
Not to mention that everything we say on this show is a reflection of our own personal views and does not necessarily reflect the views of Daydreamer Network.
Precisely. For example, we think Buffy should have ended up with Angel. Daydreamer might be on Team Spike. That's not our business.
Listen at your own risk.